Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I thought I'd start out the show talking about the Hurricane Maria and how it fits into some of the Meyer prophecies and predictions. So let's go ahead and jump into that, and we'll see how this all goes. You know, the interesting thing is that Billy has predicted that in the third millennium that we either have a third global conflagration, which is a great war, or we'll go back into primitive, harsh types of living. These are two of his prophecies, and it looks like Puerto Rico, which has been devastated by Hurricane Maria, is in fact heading back to the most primitive kinds of conditions again, because these people will not have power on probably for 6 months. So this is part of the trends that Billy's talked about, the overpopulation of the earth with 9 billion people on the planet and the destroying of the forests has created a situation, and it isn't the primary cause or the only cause necessarily, but when you destroy the forests, it takes away some of the moderating effects of the weather on the planet. The forests tend to have a low albedo, meaning they won't reflect a lot of light back in the wintertime. For example, if you have snow and ice in an area in the wintertime, it will reflect a lot of light back. So that area tends to stay a lot cooler. In the summertime, the forests provide shade, and that shade helps to cool the air. So in the winter, the forests tend to warm things up a little bit. In the summer, they tend to cool things down a little bit. So the air temperatures stay more moderate. Now, this helps keep our climate stable. So the forests are a stabilizing factor in the weather on Earth. And as the human population has increased and increased and increased, we've destroyed more of the forests, which has tended to cause these extremes in weather. And I also think there's a technology that helps to stir up these storms and potentially even guide them. And there's this other factor with the deep state. And I think there is a foreign power. I don't know who it is. I don't know if it's Saudi Arabia. I don't know who or what it is. But there's some kind of foreign power that seems to be warring against the United States from the inside. For example, maybe the CIA. It's just a speculation on my part. I have no idea. But we will play a clip by James McCanney on weather control that will be interesting, but I thought it would be good to go through some of the things that are happening in Puerto Rico after Maria. And as you know, Maria is a Category 5 hurricane, which finally I think is gone. It hit Puerto Rico, I think, on September 19th, which winds that got up near 160 miles per hour and devastated the infrastructure of Puerto Rico and the country of Dominica. So Puerto Rico will be without power for about 6 months now because of this. And again, this is part of the prophecies and the predictions of the Meyer material that we would either have a third global conflagration or we would go back to the most primitive forms of living. And this is all related back to population. It's much more complicated than what I've indicated to you, but it's certainly something to consider. So I'm going to step out of the way a minute and just rip through a whole series of clips that I've made and probably not say much until the end of all this.
We are back with a Fox News alert.
hot, isolated, and running out of everything. This is a grim reality people are facing in Puerto Rico after Maria. We are back with a Fox News alert. Hot, isolated, and running out of everything. This is a grim reality people are facing in Puerto Rico after Maria, the hurricane, left the island crippled.
A dam still threatening to burst in the southwest area, forcing thousands now to evacuate.
All right, Fox News correspondent Geraldo Rivera just reunited with his family in San Juan. Hingy joins us live right there. Geraldo, how bad?
Hi, Brian, Ainsley, and Steve. It is very, very bad. You know, I know America is a great and compassionate country, but I fear that distracted by that whole NFL national anthem thing and also suffering compassion fatigue after Hurricane Harvey and then Irma and now Maria, people won't be able to get their arms around the slow-moving, absolutely humanitarian disaster that is unfolding here in Puerto Rico. I mean, the two main items there, they have no electricity. They need electricity to pump water, so they have no water. So you have a population of 3.4 million people living in dire, dire straits. They are waiting online for gasoline for up to 6 to 8 hours just to buy $20 worth of gas. They need gas to fuel their generators because there is no power. The electrical grid is absolutely, absolutely destroyed. And remember, this was a 1-2 punch. For people in the Virgin Islands, first it was Hurricane Irma. Then came Hurricane Maria. Yesterday we met people who had actually suffered the eye wall of both hurricanes.
And the Puerto Ricans showed up to come save us, to bring us back to here. And that was last Saturday, and then to have this happen again, oh my God, it's been quite an adventure.
We are back with a Fox News alert, hot, isolated, and running out of everything. This is a grim reality.
Many of these travelers are desperate. Some have been here for days. Mothers sleeping on the phone, on the floor with their children. Now, it is hot and steamy here. There is no AC. Backup generators are keeping the lights on for about 10 commercial flights a day. And now there are concerns that Maria's wide debt, whether this exodus could be a sign of things to come.
This morning, growing signs throughout Puerto Rico of another crisis. Already ravaged by the most powerful hurricane to hit the island in decades, it could soon face a huge migration. Puerto Ricans by the tens of thousands leaving what's left of their homes and coming to the U.S. mainland. The governor sounding the alarm.
Do you expect a mass exodus of Puerto Ricans to the U.S. mainland?
If conditions are inhospitable, if we don't have the resources to rebuild properly, then yes, and this is going to cause a problem for Puerto Rico, but of course it's going to cause a problem for the mainland as well.
All over the U.S. territory, these American citizens are struggling to survive. No running water, gas is scarce, and they could be without power for months. These nighttime images from space dramatically show the island before Hurricane Maria and after. Most of the electric grid completely wiped out. NBC's Lester Holt rode along with the National Guard, flying into San Juan with desperately needed supplies.
People talk about how bad it is, but you really don't see it until you see it.
Overnight, President Trump tweeting, because of its broken infrastructure and massive debt, Puerto Rico is in deep trouble. Much of the island was destroyed, with billions of dollars owed to Wall Street and the banks, which sadly must be dealt with.
We're going to have a big problem.
With their island in ruins, Luis Romero and his wife have temporarily moved from San Juan to near Sarasota, but they're thinking about making it permanent unless there's massive aid to fix the devastation fast.
People are not going to wait too long. I mean, they're going to start flying over here in droves.
Right now, switching gears to a Fox News alert, help is on the way for the island of Puerto Rico. American military forces deploying to the island to help those whose lives have been completely uprooted by Hurricane Maria.
Only about half the people living there have drinking water at this moment. 95% of that island is completely without power.
Geraldo Rivera is witnessing firsthand. He is live in Puerto Rico with the latest on the recovery expert, the recovery effort. Hey, Geraldo.
Hey, Brian, Ainsley, and Steve. Yes, the search and rescue, the most emergent of the needs for Puerto Rico, that phase, the search and rescue phase, even the medical evacuation phase, those are well underway, if not over by now. Now comes the grunt work. You indicated the three great needs in Puerto Rico now. There is no cell phone service. There's no communications. People don't know how their relatives have fared. So they're desperate, even in my family, to find out how people are. So you need communications. You need electricity. Virtually this entire island is without electricity. Much of the fresh water is pumped by electricity. So many, many people, well over half, have no fresh water. These are very, very difficult situations, and the fleet has arrived, and the Marines have landed, as you indicated, to bring that kind of help, the kind of bulk commodity help. I went out by chopper to the aircraft carrier Kearsarge, and there at the aircraft carrier, we spoke to the Rear Admiral Hughes in charge of the Expeditionary Force and some of the ship's officers and Marine Corps officers who are sending teams ashore to get this island back plugged in, because now it's in the dark ages. Here's Admiral Hughes.
Nothing makes us more proud than to be able to be down here to help those that are going through such a tough time. And frankly, we know that if it was us that was going through a similar situation, people would be there for us.
People cannot get out to get the food and water that they need, or other get to a hospital or EMS get to them. So what we do is we go ashore with the CVs from the Navy, heavy equipment, chainsaws, and we start to clear routes.
I think it is a mission that the American people probably are just not exposed to. When they think of Navy, they think of, hey, we're going in.
The way several of the officials have described it is the end of modern life. Across Puerto Rico, there is almost no power and no cell phone signal. And for a lot of the basic necessities that folks need to survive, things like water, food, and fuel, there are severe shortages. And if you're looking to get any of those, many people are facing lines that stretch for hours.
It's terrible. Everyone is fighting for gasoline. My husband goes out at 4 in the morning every day to get gasoline for the generator and gets back at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon with $10 at the most. And so we are trying to leave. We can survive, but we have a little girl and it's complicated. This is crazy.
And we've heard that same frustration from a lot of people here. With no power, communication, and shortages on food, water, and fuel, hundreds of people are now heading to the airport to try and find some way off the island to get to the States where they can stay with family or friends until Puerto Rico can be able to get back on its feet. I spoke to the governor a little bit ago, though, and he assured me that help is on the way. They are working to set up water stations across the country so that folks can be able to get that water that they need. They're also working on getting fuel distributed and that supply chain back up and running as they clear off roads and slowly get folks back to some semblance of normal life. There are also still some remote parts of the island that they have not been able to establish contact with to see how they're doing, how bad the damage is. And today they are working on arranging flybys of those areas to establish contact and see what kind of help they need. But we were at the airport this morning, Shannon, and I can tell you help is on the way. It is
canny on is this whole national security and now global security system, where the upper class gets into the cult of secret government corporations, and then they travel up that to the corporate or military ladder, and then they get access to what's going on, at least pieces of it, but the public doesn't, and only the people up at the very, very top get to then see how all the pieces are fitting together. That's real discrimination. That's control of knowledge. And Professor James McCanney breaks that down. I'm not going to go over all the things he's done and all the things he's been involved in, but I'd like to just get his general take on where we are globally right now. We've got all the Kuiper Belt objects. They're now admitting more of those come to the solar system. We've got massive record earthquakes. Mexico was going to help in the situation in Texas with Harvey until they got hit with the biggest earthquake in their history. Why does all this connect together? What's going on with the stone, the sun? We'll get his perspective. We've been having astrophysicists on lately, you name it, to give us their take. So, Professor James McCanney, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks for having me here.
So you're really the super expert on everything. Give us your breakdown just on what you think is most important.
Well, Alex, I worked with Russian scientists in the mid-1990s, and what we developed were two systems for degrading hurricanes, leading them offshore. And this information was given to the U.S. military because Russia really doesn't have a problem with hurricanes. We do. And the U.S. military... We knew that they had militarized this information in the early 2000s. They sent up three large satellites. They said they were for communications. We knew that they were laser satellites, and they have been using these to manipulate storms. That's when the serious storm manipulation problem began. And the way they do this, hurricanes, we first have to dispel this myth that hurricanes are somehow created and maintained by warm water. Totally incorrect. The hurricanes are powered by electrical currents from the ionosphere, and what we learned is how to enhance and use those currents to steer hurricanes away from shore and away from harm of the public. Now they're using these, and you could see it with Hurricane Irma, was built and designed in the eastern Atlantic and just guided across. That's why these hurricane models supposedly predicted where they were going to go up Florida days, almost a week in advance. It's absurd. But this was one of the most manipulated guided storms I've ever seen, along with Hurricane Katrina, which was a totally manipulated storm for maximum destruction. This was to destroy Florida, evacuate Florida, just as Hurricane Harvey was to destroy Houston.
You know, we could pull up time-lapse of Hurricane Katrina's satellite or also radar composites, and it comes in out of the Atlantic, it goes up the side, sits there and waits a couple days, and then races across and goes right into Louisiana. And again, I had Ben Livingston on, the father of a lot of our modern weather weapons, and it was declassified. I saw his name in a newspaper, called him, got him on. He got a visit a week after, and he told me, he said, I can't ever talk to anybody again. They've reclassified it. They just threatened me. But he said they had systems that control hurricanes and steer them and or kill them back in the 1960s.
What you have is a low-pressure cell. And part of the manipulation is to manipulate the public into believing that this is caused by warm water. And so if the public doesn't understand the true nature of hurricanes, now we're seeing on the screen here, look at the eye. Is this Katrina? I'm assuming this
yes.
is Katrina. Yeah, it came in. And I just read some analysis from some weather reporters, how they were totally taken by surprise at the path and the strengthening of Katrina. It was totally off the records. It was totally out of control, but it was being controlled for maximum destruction of New Orleans. And look, we have no record of maybe millions of people that were in New Orleans. I used to live in New Orleans. I went to Tulane for grad school, and I rode all around the levees.
It's from cognitive dissonance that we get these incredible mind contradictions. For instance, we're going to war to fight for peace. Cognitive dissonance, classic. And George Orwell talked in his book 1984 about doublethink, which again is a form of cognitive dissonance to square the circle. Doublethink means the power of holding two contradictory beliefs in one's mind simultaneously and accepting both of them. Fighting for peace. And that's where this comes from. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. And only by persuading us to take on these contradictions and accept them as real can the few control the many. And the idea, and my goodness me, they've got so many people in this world, in this state, the idea is to keep us in a total and constant state of confusion, thinking the world is sane when it's utterly crazy.
Some very interesting thoughts by David Icke on cognitive dissonance. Also, some interesting discussion between Professor James McCanney and Alex Jones on weather control and whether some of these storms have been steered. And then we had our series of clips on Puerto Rico and the destruction of Hurricane Maria. Well, our friend from Switzerland, Edward Albert Meyer, has been predicting since, he's been in his teens, I guess, that as the population of the Earth got larger and larger, we would start to experience more things along these lines. One of the bits of my research has been the fact that the forests moderate the weather, and that as populations of humans grow, we tend to destroy our forests, and which in turn makes our weather more extreme. Now, there are probably many, many other things that overpopulation does in terms of making our weather more negative. I'll continue to do research in that area. George Orwell was one individual that David Icke brought up, and George Orwell, his real name is Eric Arthur Blair. His pen name was George Orwell. He was an English novelist. He died around 1950. He wrote some very interesting books about social injustice, totalitarianism. He wrote a book called The Animal Farm, which you may have had to read like I did in high school. And he also wrote a dystopian novel called 1984, which talks about a future in which there is no freedom, a tyranny of a centralized government that he predicts will happen. And it's in a tyranny that seems to be rolling forward. It's also a tyranny that Billy, Edward Albert Meyer, has also described is occurring. And one of the things that Billy has predicted is that we would see the removal of self-determination, and that our leaders would be taking all of our power of self-determination, meaning that people would lose the ability for independent thought. Independent thought is what allows the evolution of our consciousness. The evolution of our consciousness is the purpose for our life. The evolution of our consciousness also goes hand in hand with this concept called love, in which we live and help each other live. And that also applies to the plants, to the animals, as well as other human beings. But the global elite, the governments of the world, the religions of the world will continue to towards removal of self-determination. There's an interesting movie called The Globalist Agenda for a Dumbed-Down Domesticated Society by Alan Watt. And Zbigniew Brzezinski, the National Security Advisor for Carter, stated that shortly the public would be unable to think and reason for themselves. And I think we're pretty much there. Billy put it this way. He said that people will become indolent and obtuse in the third millennium. And indolent means too lazy to work, to figure things out. And obtuse would be very, very slow to understand. One of the things we're seeing is the attack on the right to bear arms. We're also seeing the attack on freedom of speech. And Billy puts it this way in The Goblet of Truth. He says, therefore, you're becoming ever more indifferent towards one another, more mistrustful of one another, and increasingly emotionless, disinterested, indolent, and obtuse in interpersonal relations, which is causing simple human connections to be destroyed and entire families to be ruined. Under such unbearable circumstances, many amongst you will feel blazing anger rise up in you and will therefore torment other fellow human beings or extract bloody revenge on them. I've seen this. I've seen it sometimes in myself, the rise of anger. I've seen also this tormenting that occurs for some strange reason. So what is happening is a confusion and maliciousness is spreading all over the world. And it's going to take longer for humanity as a whole to grasp what It means to evolve your consciousness. It's something that I'm still trying to understand. And it's all about learning to think independently, to analyze our thoughts, and to maintain what's called neutral positive thinking. And neutral positive thinking is a very interesting concept. It allows you to be neutral no matter how you may feel about something. Let me read something in The Might of Thoughts that's kind of along those lines, that talks about our present situation, and it talks about how everything stands or falls in relationship to your own thoughts. Regardless of how the human being's present situations and surroundings may form and may appear, they will always be in accord with his or her thoughts, and he or she, and thereby also his or her word, stands or falls precisely with his or her thoughts, as well as his or her ruminations, visions, fantasies, ideals, wishes. It is the thoughts which create and sustain everything, which allow everything to remain. Therefore, he or she is as great as the highest and positive, good, healthy, and pure strivings, which he or she allows to dominate in him or herself and his or her thoughts. So you're as good as your thoughts are in the current now moment. So one of the things I tell myself, and one of the takeaways I've learned from the Might of Thoughts book, is the idea of these seven characteristics of good thought, which are: I'm optimistic. Tell yourself I'm optimistic. I'm confident. So if you can, many of our problems deal with not being optimistic and not being confident. You need to learn to be confident, because you trust in yourself. You trust in your own optimism. You trust in your own knowledge, in your own dedication, in your own hard work. See, you can compare the evolution of your consciousness to a tree. You know, a tree grows visibly. We see big, beautiful trees. We see trees which are not doing as good. But the tree has a whole root system underneath. So what you're doing with learning this material is building the root system for the stability of your life. So you tell yourself, I'm optimistic, I'm confident, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful. Now we've got four things. So this is building your root system. And that's what we're trying to do here, is building the root system of stability. And it's a constant struggle. It never goes away. We're always going to have to strive towards this neutral positive thinking. And it's the neutral positive thinking which brings about the good circumstances. Elizabeth Mooseberger said that this book, she wrote the dedication, it's dedicated to humankind that's ill in its consciousness. And the evolution of our consciousness is brought about through independent thinking. And it's hard to imagine we live in a society where independent thinking is rare. So work towards that. Independent thinking leads to the evolution of your consciousness. But today we're told how we should think by media, churches, organizations. Again, thought is an idea. It's an opinion. Thought is the process of using one's mind to consider or reason about something. Evolution is the process of growth, and it's a process of gradual, peaceful, progressive change. And a lot of times, this progressive change requires us to use logic. And this is why the word logic was pulled out of the New Testament. And the Talmud of Emmanuel talks about logic. And the mind of thoughts explains how faith will short-circuit logic. So you don't need faith if you have logic. If you have logic, then you can get to knowledge. And if you have knowledge, you don't need faith. You can have faith that your refrigerator exists, or you can go out there and open the door and see that the refrigerator is existing and it has food in it. And that's observation and experimentation. But you have to take the responsibility to go and see if you have a refrigerator. Don't just sit there on your duff and use faith. Use your reasoning. Now, one of the challenges here is to stay in control of the good human nature. That's what we're trying to do here. Negative thinking leads to what's called asartung. And if you're too positive in your thinking, that also leads to asartung, which is the getting out of control of the good human nature. It's the neutral positive thinking that repairs your psyche. And it's the automatic thoughts which are the critical point here, because the automatic thoughts disturb the feelings first, and the disturbing of your feelings produces the disturbing of your psyche. So we've got to learn to stop doing the things we don't want to do, which are these wrong thoughts which rotate in our consciousness. They are like weeds growing in your garden. They go out of control. We need to think in our material consciousness the way the spirit form operates, in a neutral, positive manner. We need to be thinking with love and wisdom. We need to have constructive thoughts which produce a calmness. You know, it's really nice when you're wrapped in negative thinking and suddenly you have a constructive thought and you kind of feel like, ah, wow, that feels so much better. So you need to observe your feelings, because the feelings come from the thoughts. The feelings grow out of the thoughts. You shouldn't suppress your feelings. You should observe them. If they're negative feelings, then you had a negative thought that started that. And the feelings will tell you if you're thinking is right or wrong. The feelings are very much analogous to the spirit form. The feeling, you can tell when your feelings are disturbed. Neutral positive thinking almost never disturbs the psyche. So when you have pain and suffering and affliction and a lack of understanding, this is always related to your thoughts, because you're the forger of your own fortune. You form your own luck and your own external circumstances by your thoughts. So don't think purely negative or purely positive, but think in a neutral positive form. The neutral and the positive must be brought together and equalized. You are the creator of your own character, your own personality, and the state of your psyche. And the psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. Remember, you have a material consciousness, a spiritual consciousness. Your material consciousness is who you are in this lifetime. The spiritual consciousness is the sum total of your learning through all your lifetimes. Your spiritual consciousness is always neutral, positive. Remember, the Telstock in the German is the fragment, the part, piece. Our spirit form is analogous to a fragment of the universal consciousness. The spirit form in the German is the Geist form. So you have this fragment, something like a fragment of the universal consciousness, which exists in the middle of your superior colliculus in your middle brain, where your vision is controlled, where the integration of all your senses occurs. So when you start to think, make sure your thoughts are influenced by your spirit form. And one way to do this is to clarify your thoughts. Clarifying makes your thoughts more harmonious. Clarifying takes the confusion out. It makes things comprehensible. That takes effort and practice and patience. And part of clarifying your thoughts is having confidence in yourself and being optimistic. To clarify means to clear the confusion and the uncertainty, to make things more intelligible, to make things free from ambiguity. And the word confusion means a lack of understanding and uncertainty. Confusion comes from a word in Latin, which means to pour things together. So in confusion, the boundary between things are lost. And we're told to eliminate impure thoughts on page 22 of the Might of Thoughts, way back in the beginning. Here's a little section which I'll read to you. It says, therefore, the consciousness and the thoughts which arise from it must be cultivated and cared for, as with a precious garden, which is kept free of weeds, in which flowers bloom, and vegetables as well as the fruit grow, which on the one hand bring the human being joy and harmony, on the other hand are certain nourishment for him or her, just as the garden is developed and tended and cared for according to the wishes of the human being, so must the consciousness be cared for and tended, and in fact in the form that all wrong, useless, negative, impure thoughts are eliminated. I caught myself having some useless and impure thoughts this morning. I'm sure you can remember, at least in the past couple of days, where you had some useless, impure thoughts, negative thoughts, wrong thoughts. We need to eliminate those. Now, let's talk about Emmanuel for a minute and Emmanuel's final teachings. He said, truly I say to you, a love that is unlimited, constant, and unfailing is unconditional and is pure love, whose fire, all that is impure and evil, will be burned. And he said, everything within human beings must die, but everything of creation within them must rise and embrace creation. So all those impure thoughts, all those negative thoughts must die. Only the harmonious, neutral, positive thoughts, which are influenced by your spirit form, should stick around. Okay, now let's dive into some of the, let's call it the controversial, for lack of a better term. Because who was Emmanuel? Who is Emmanuel? And this is something, as I've said many times before, I kind of steered away from in the Meyer material very much. Now, Emmanuel is one of the former personalities of Edward Albert Meyer. Edward Albert Meyer is an 80-year-old man who lives in Hinterschmidruti, Switzerland, which is about 45 minutes east of Zurich. You can get there by bus. You can get there by car if you land in Zurich or someplace similar. It's northern Switzerland. There are beautiful forests there, white snow-capped mountains there. Billy lived even farther north when he was a young boy. Now, one of his former personalities, according to the Meyer information, is a man named Emmanuel, who unfortunately we call Jesus today. And I always didn't see how that was possible. I thought, oh, that must be a hoax. How could that be true? Well, if you look at the King James Bible of 1611, You will not see the word Jesus in it. They called him at that time, which is around 1600 or so, Iesus, I-E-S-U-S. You won't even see the word judge in the King James Bible. You'll see the word I-U-D-G-E. No books written before 1600 had the letter J in them. Copies of the Gutenberg Bible still exist. And in them, the book of Job is called the book of Iob. And the Gutenberg Bible is considered the first major book printed using movable type in Europe. It was printed around 1455. So the 1611 version of the King James Bible had no letter J. Now, later versions did, like 1769 version. Now, a man named Gian Giorgio Turrisino is credited with bringing the letter J into existence. He was an Italian scholar who spoke German, among other things, and he started substituting in certain manuscripts the letter J for the letter I and for the letter Y. Well, this became popular for one reason or another. So, names like IOB were changed to JOB. At this time, the word Iesus or IESVS eventually became, shortly after that time, IESUS, which referred to this person that the Meyer material calls Emmanuel, eventually became JESUS. Then the name Jesus is a recent word when compared to the age of the Bible. So if we go, I'll just jump back in history shortly to about 1313, which was around the time of the Edict of Milan in the Rome. And it was when the First Council of Nicaea came along. And Constantine, who was the Roman emperor at that time, his intention was to unify all of Christianity. And one of the things about Christianity is they couldn't agree on what his real name was. There was no agreement on who this teacher's name was. Some called him Emmanuel. They I-E-S-U-S. I've heard arguments that he was called Yeshua. I believe, according to some sources, eventually he was called Jesus Krishna at some point, which is the new Roman god, the one that was ratified by Constantine. So around many hundreds of years later, We think, with Gian Giorgio Turrisino, we got the name Jesus. Now, there's a very interesting website. I got to give some credit out there to a website called Yahweh.com. There was no name Jesus in the ancient world because the letter J did not exist at that time. The letter J did not exist until about 1550. Go look up Old English, the letters of Old English. There was no J there. There were other missing letters, too. The J, a letter of the alphabet, which, as far as form is concerned, is only a modification of Latin I, dates back with a separate value only to about the 15th century. So there was no letter J to translate things into. So that's why the earliest forms of the Bible didn't have the name Jesus in them. The Greek spelling for Jesus began with the letter I. It was pronounced Jesus. There was no person, I know this sounds like blasphemy, there was no person named Jesus Christ in the ancient world. The 1611 version of the King James Bible had the name IESVS. The name Jesus is actually a hybrid The letter J did not exist in any ancient language until about the time of Christopher Columbus. This is a fact provable if you look up the unabridged dictionary, look under the letter J. Therefore, no one referred to him as Jesus until the 16th of the 17th century. Why do I say all this? How does this relate to our current information? Because the Meyer material calls him Emmanuel, and if you look in Isaiah 7:14, it calls him Emmanuel. If you look in Matthew 1:23, it calls him Emmanuel. Today, our teachers, quote, the people that cause all the confusion in the world, our teachers will say, well, that was just a title, Emmanuel, even though it says his name is Emmanuel. It says, no, that was just a title. We don't know our own history. We don't know where we come from. We don't know the meaning of our lives. That's why we're destroying the earth. In the 1611 version of the King James, it says, the New Testament of our Lord and Savior, IESVS. Some say the name Jesus came about in around 1632 in a court document in England. It's hard to say. There's a great YouTube out there called The Letter J. I'm going to have to make it a clip so we can listen to it again. Actually, I might have this clip. I think I do have it somewhere. There was no W, J, or U in the Old English. This film is called The Letter J. No written books before 1600 AD had the letter J in it. Julius Caesar was not spelled with a J. It did not have the sound of the J. The same with the name Jesus Christ. Some scholars believe that the word that began with an I were pronounced as if they were a Y. For example, the names of James and John were changed. James' real name was Yaakov, some argue. John's real name was Yahuchanan. You can't even pronounce them. I can't pronounce these words correctly. In the old paintings of the crucifixion, in the Renaissance and such, you'll see the acronym INRI at the top of the cross. The acronym INRI means Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iodorium in Latin, which we would say, instead of pronouncing his name as Iesus, we say Jesus Nazarene, King of the Jews. The word would be pronounced as Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iodorium. So we could talk more about transliteration etymology, but I don't want to bore you too much. The Meyer information says the original name of the Christ figure was not Yeshua, Emmanuel was his name. It has the meaning der mit Gottlich Wissen, the one with godly knowledge. And with godly knowledge of an Ishwish, a king of wisdom, which were these ancient extraterrestrial men who were on the earth that had great wisdom. Emmanuel is one of the old traditional first names, was called the Ur form. Ur means most ancient. In other words, the name Emmanuel, which eventually should be and can be spelled with the letter J because the Lyrians in their language had a letter J. The story of the life of Emmanuel is written in the book called The Talmud of Emmanuel. And there have been attempts to destroy the Talmud, just like the books of Henoch were destroyed, among others. They were removed from the Bible. The Talmud of Emmanuel is no longer can be found. The original scrolls were destroyed in Jerusalem in 1963. A Catholic priest, Isa Rashid, discovered a small cave in the slope of a hill and discovered the manuscript called the Talmud of Emmanuel, which tells a different story of the person we call Jesus today. This man's life, he talked about the universal consciousness of creation never talked about a Heavenly Father. He talked about the immortality of the human spirit form through reincarnation. Never talked about judgment or the removal or forgiveness of sin or anything like that. Eventually, like I said, this scroll was discovered by Billy Meyer Issa Rashid. And if you look in, for example, in Isaiah 7:14, it says, "The Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a young woman shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel." In the New Testament, Matthew 1:23, "Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and his name shall be called Emmanuel." And the original translation of the Talmud of Emmanuel is somewhat inaccurate because of mistakes in the translation that occurred. Well, kind of went off on a little bit of a tangent today. That happens a lot. When we study the Meyer material, it goes into so many different places where we can describe various things. Hello, Evelyn. Eve is there. Topic to discuss, psychopathic behavior. I can talk about that. Hello, Gemini Mood. Psychopathic behavior. Well, this is an interesting, this is coming straight from the chat room. It's actually something bizarre that I've been studying. A sociopath's, one thing is about a sociopath, if you're dealing with a sociopath, which I think probably we all are right now, there are plenty of them out there, and actually you should have compassion for these people. Because these are people that, you know, you and I are going to wig out because, you know, it's just part of, we all struggle. We're not perfect. But a sociopath is a person whose thoughts are running out of control completely all the time. And they're in a state of ass or tongue. It's a person suffering from a chronic mental disorder. Sometimes they'll have violent behavior. As there is a psychopath and a sociopath. Now, these are two different things which are sometimes hard to keep straight. The psychopath is really, I mean, he's gone so far, he's just completely into violent behavior. A sociopath is a little different. A sociopath has poor impulse control. The key difference between a psychopath and a sociopath is that the sociopath has very little conscious. He doesn't have a conscious, meaning he doesn't really have that little voice inside his head that's telling him, hey, wait a minute, you're doing something wrong here. Sociopath and a psychopath are very dangerous people. A psychopath also doesn't have a conscious. In the sense of they've completely, both of them have completely gone into what the Meyer material would call asar tongue. I mean, it's getting very badly out of control of the good human nature. Another thing, so one of the things I could tell you is if you know a person that's a sociopath or a psychopath, you believe, try to interact with them as little as possible. You have to continually tell yourself and remind yourself of being neutral positive all the time in their presence because they have very poor impulse control, and you'll see they're just always in this, you know, they're, and they want to be in control. They want to control you. Oh, it's good luck if you're in that situation. Another thing I want to talk about just really quickly, as we've got a few minutes left here, I don't know where the time went today, is this whole idea of religious experience shrinking part of your brain. I'm going a little off of the Meyer material here, but Billy is constantly telling us how dangerous our religions are. So religious factors can cause what's called hippocampal atrophy, especially in late life. So people at Duke University have a whole section there of study that talks about the relationship of the brain and religion. And hippocampus, your hippocampus deals with your short-term, your long-term memory, your spatial memory, navigation, major role in this part of your thinking. Another thing is related to stress hormones, because I think because we all have a spirit form within us that knows the falseness of religion that they're involved in it. This causes people that are religious to experience higher levels of stress because they're going against their own internal guidance system, but they don't know it. See, the problem is they don't know it. Their spirit form, which is completely neutral positive, will continually be impulsing them, know what you're thinking is false. Know what you're thinking is not right. Know what you're thinking is not right, what you're being taught. This causes a release of stress hormones that depress the hippocampus over time. So these people that are in this constant inner turmoil, and this is really interesting because I was involved in religion and didn't really know what was going on. I mean, it's a long story I won't bore you with, but I just watched a lady, for example. She was the valedictorian of her class, and she was very religious, evidently a fantastic student, and she was up there in her final speech before her whole class in some college trying to tell these people how they should follow the Bible and follow religion and all this, and she was just vibrating, and she starts rocking back and forth, and because she's just literally struggling with her own beliefs, and she's suppressing her own spirit form, which is trying to guide her, and she literally collapses on the stage there. The biblical books, they were typically not written by the persons to whom they were ascribed. It is also, for example, incorrect that the Gospel of Luke and Acts of the Apostles came from Luke. The book of Job was not written by Job, or really what it was called was the book of Iob at that time. So the letters in the New Testament weren't even written by the people whom they were assigned. No one checked these scribes. So many of these scribes just wrote down things that were completely false. And anyway, if you want more information on that, you can go to Contact Report 212. And there's a whole interesting section on that in the Meyer material. Wow, we've only got a minute left. I want to thank you folks for listening. The people that are blowing up the archives, thank you. Just unbelievable numbers coming into the archives. Fantastic. That's good. We got a chance. I'll try to get back to more of the spiritual teachings so we can learn how to control our thoughts. That's the key to everything. I want to thank you for listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.